Galaxy 891 presents Apple Box Talks, the podcast where we get to talk to the very best artists, technicians, and stakeholders that make up the BC entertainment industry. From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Crystal. Today on the Apple Box, we're joined by BC's Minister of Tourism, Arts, Culture and Sport, and representative for Vancouver West End, Minister Spencer Chandra Herbert. First elected provincially in 2008 as the youngest MLA in the legislature, the minister has been a long-term advocate for renters' rights, environmental stewardship, and protections in the BC Human Rights Code for members of the 2SLGBTQIA+ community. Welcome to the Apple Box.
Wonderful to join you. Great to be here, Crystal.
Thank you. So how and why did you get into politics?
I guess I was raised with the strong belief through my family that if you want to make change, you've got to do it yourself and you've got to be involved. So volunteerism was something, you know, I was a bit of a dorky kid at school. So the way I made friends was through volunteering, put on the dance, put on the show, put on, you know, go out and help stop old growth being cut down, you know, kind of, I think, environmentalism. And that kind of piqued my interest at a young age, you know, the issues of climate change. I wrote a letter to the editor at the age of 10 around climate change and killing fish through drift net fishing, and needed a change because I like tuna fish sandwiches, but I also like dolphins. So, you know, it's just kind of been something I've always been interested in. So, I don't think I imagined myself being a politician because I didn't like a lot of the politicians I saw. But folks said, hey, if you want to change things, you actually have to be in the room. And I've actually found that, yes, indeed, that you can make a lot of change from the outside, but sometimes you can make way more change way faster if you're on the inside. So I still keep my foot on the outside as well, in a sense, because I'm not going to be doing this job forever. But you can make a real difference. So that's why I got involved and why I'm still doing it.
So we often joke that by merit, just by living in BC, that you're part of the motion picture industry. And you come into this particular role with a little bit of a history. Could you share that for our listeners?
Oh, I've got a bit of a history. Watch out. Thank you, Hillary. My family's involved in the arts, theater primarily. But my first involvement in film, I was maybe 8, maybe 6, somewhere in that range. Legends of the Fall, which took over Gastown, and Brad Pitt and the whole gang came out, and my uncle was an art director in film, Rick Roberts, some people might know him, and he said, we need some extras. And so now we're background talent, but you know, we were extras at the age of 6 or 8 or whatever it was, and I remember eating many prop candy apples. Only after I ate 3 did they tell me that I wasn't actually supposed to eat the props, but they were tasty, so thank you to the prop maker.
I feel like whoever produced Legends of the Fall owes us something in residuals, because I feel like we've had a lot of people who that was a formative experience for them here in Vancouver.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, it was a big Hollywood movie, you know, and a lot of people found a connection to film. And then after that, I did a couple of other background performer things through high school, The Punisher, some other things, and saw, oh, there I'm on the TV, holy. And then I helped folks on the production side, marrying film and dance and high tech and theater and young people's voices as an artist myself. So it's been a passion. Yeah, when the premier asked me, what ministry do you want to be the minister for? If you had that choice, I said, totally, make me the film minister, make me the tourism, make me the arts minister. This is what I've been pushing for many, 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 many years. I got to know lots of folks in the film industry, of course, back in the Save BC Film days of 2013 and the challenging times at that point. And it's always been a passion.
Well, and we so appreciate your appointment. You've done so much work with us already, referring to essentially getting on a plane less than 48 hours after being sworn in as tax minister, along with Minister Bailey and PS Krieger.
Indeed. Well, the industry is, you know, as many listeners will know, it's not been at its peak these days, to put it bluntly. And we knew that if we could send a signal to some of our best customers that we are open for business, we've got good competitive tax policy coming through, partnering with the industry, so with labor, with the producers, with Screen BC, all of the players together in Hollywood, why wouldn't we do it? And I know there was resistance on the bureaucracy side. Oh, my, you're just getting sworn in. We haven't even briefed you. I said, no, we got to make it happen because we know the file. We know we love it. We want more jobs here. So let's go and get some more jobs here.
Well, and that's just exactly the pace at which the film industry moves. And you responded, the government responded, and it's making a difference. This is what it takes to get the industry back to where it is. Why do you think it is that the current government is so supportive of the film and television industry in BC?
You know, the BC NDP government, we recognize that it's good jobs, well-paid jobs, primarily anyways, mostly union jobs. So there's protection for workers. It's showcasing our locations, incredible BC, showcasing the talents we have, the great people. And it's just, it's good, joyful work. You know, it's work people want to be involved in. And we grew the industry in the early 90s when we were government, introducing most of the labor tax credits at that time. And of course, that paid off in a massive way. And I think, you know, my joke is when we visited Hollywood, I'd say, oh, it's great to be here in Hollywood South, because we're Hollywood North. But BC loves this work. And, you know, their government should be there backing this work. It's an industry that works well on the union and the business side together with mutual respect, usually. Not always, of course, you have to push and you have to make folks do their jobs. But it's a great industry for BC, and the more the merrier. So if you're listening in and thinking of coming to BC, you do that. You know, invest your dollars here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's inclusive of our domestic industry as well, who also benefit from the tax credit. We love and support our domestic creatives as well, and we also know that the government is very supportive in that section also.
Yeah, it's a hugely important part of our industry. I think, obviously, Hollywood was not working very much, but some of our domestic industry continued. They were able to continue with work and keeping people employed, and I think when you see a BC story being shared on the TV or on the web or maybe even in a big movie screen theater, you know, it's pretty exciting. And I think we've got to do more to grow our domestic side because those are our stories. And, you know, we invested to help from the very beginning stages, looking at the script writing, the screenwriting, and how do you develop that and how do you turn it into something much bigger? And I think we're now starting to see the results with, you know, major awards, major pickups from some of the major industry, small little BC stories, which get big and those royalty dollars stay here and we can reinvest those in the film industry and tell more of our stories. So no, it's all to the good.
Yeah, for sure. And what's lovely about the relationship between the two is that when a bigger show comes from a different location, a foreign service, a production, and brings some new technology or brings sort of a new way of looking at things or a new way of doing things, it trains all of our crew, which then in turn brings it back and feeds it directly back into the added production value that domestic has. So we like to call it an ecosystem.
Yeah.
It works well together.
Very much. You know, I think of a show like Shogun, you know, there was major work having to be done on styling and, you know, the costumes and the hair and the makeup. And I'm sure there was training involved to be able to do it culturally appropriately. And once you learn it, you know, that's something you can either pass on or take to another production. And when people want to know, do we have experienced people who can do X, Y, Z? Well, we do. And, you know, IATSE 891 certainly can share that, but so do our producers. And they're able to very quickly point and say, yeah, actually, we've got a huge roster of people who can fill in and do this work. You know, it's not like some of the jurisdictions where they do really good tax policy, but they don't have anybody who can do the work. Mm-hmm. And so you end up having to shoot the same scene many times over. So you may have saved a little bit of money on tax credits, but you end up paying for it elsewhere. Whereas we save the money and we can do it right the first time.
Mm-hmm. World-class crews.
World-class crews, indeed.
So as you probably already know, IATSE 891 represents workers from all over BC. And sometimes there's a bit of a misconception that film really only impacts the Lower Mainland. How would you say the government is addressing that, both with the tax credits, but also the way that you're seeing the motion picture community?
You know, I always say that film is a BC story, not just a Vancouver story. And I think that's because we've structured the tax credits in a way both to incentivize production in harder to reach areas. So you get a bigger bonus or a bigger, you know, tax cut essentially to film in harder to reach locations. One of the areas that we'd found great places to film, but wasn't getting a lot of traffic, for example, was Vancouver Island, Victoria. And it just did not meet the same test for the tax credit at the time. We lobbied for it, we got it changed. And now all of a sudden you have a full-time industry essentially on the lower island and growing up the island. Whereas before it was really difficult to make it full-time. Maybe you would get a show there once and then you'd end up having to do the rest of your year on the mainland. But I talked to crew there. They go, nope, I can just stay on the island where I live. I've heard that in the Okanagan as well. There's certainly growth in the Okanagan. Even out towards the Kootenays, people might need to travel a little further, but they're used to that. You know, they're at least in the same region doing the work. Our studios are not fully booked right now. They're booking up. But I think that also forced folks to think more creatively when they were full and look at establishing studios a little farther afield or doing it differently. So certainly working with our film commissions, we're always looking for ways to boost traffic elsewhere in the province as well, because there are great locations that are still undiscovered and folks that want to work more full-time in their own communities and not just in Metro Vancouver. So yeah, it's going in the right direction anyways.
Let's swing back to politics a little bit here, because there's a lot happening right now with the United States, with our relationship with the United States. What would you say to our listeners who are frustrated or disenfranchised by politics? What advice would you give them right now?
I would say I, like you, get angry when I listen to the radio or watch the TV or, you know, doom scroll or whatever in some of the stuff that I read that's coming out. It's not constructive. It's not helpful. I think in the end, though, we've got to pull that all away and just look around our own neighborhoods. Are they better when we get involved in helping our neighbors, or do they get worse? They usually get better. The only way to make things better is by trying to make them better. It's not rocket science. Politics, I think, gets a dirty name because it gets pushed outside of the realm of our understanding or what we as individuals do. So I always go, let's bring it back to the day-to-day. How do we treat each other? How do we treat our neighborhood? What do we hope for our future, for our kids' future? And if we try and strip out all the negative stuff, you realize, actually, you can do really cool things. You know, you can make the world better, even just by being friendly to the person at the coffee shop or wherever, right? Like, their small choices make huge differences. And so I'm forever optimistic, as much as a favorite quote is Samuel Beckett's, it's never so bad that it can't get worse. So, you know, I do have that dark side to me as well, but I've learned that showing up can change lives. And there's no other way to do it. Nobody's going to rescue you, but solidarity, working together, is how you get it done.
And what do you think arts and culture's role is in that?
I think arts and culture sometimes allows us to see each other in a way that we might not have normally. It sometimes can surprise us and make us break out of our shells and consider things in another way. It can also, of course, be used as a force for evil, as we've seen too, you know, and whipping up frenzy and mania against others. But I have to hope that through the work we do, whether it's in film or any other artistic approach, that it's about building understanding, not division. And I think right now we're seeing it used a lot for division, culture wars, so to speak, dividing us against each other. And that's the oldest trick in the book. You know, if we're not united, we will be defeated. And who wants us to be disunited? Well, there's a couple of powerful political forces that will do very well, I would say, on the right, by pitting us against each other while they make off with the spoils. Like, it's an old trick. Unions see right through it because, you know, that's why we have unions. You know, it's so that we can have that solidarity built up amongst each other for, you know, trying to find that common bond, that thing that can grow the world better for all of us.
The conversation around the tariffs has galvanized Canadians across every province. Just even the talk of breaking down trade province to province. I will say, too, that our international president, Matthew D. Loeb, issued a statement talking about the joke, and I put that in air quotes for people who can't see me, about Canada being the 51st state and how it's not. And we are stronger in this moment as U.S. and Canadian members of the IATSE, and people are going to start to really understand what solidarity means. So it's really going to continue to divide or really galvanize. And I'm really feeling the collaboration part of this right now.
I'm very hopeful. I think this has shaken us out of maybe a bit of a slumber as Canadians. that we can't take what we have for granted, that if we want to make a better world, we have to make it. We can't just ride on America's coattails and hope that the spoils help us out. Like, we've got to actually build the economy we want. And I think we are much stronger united now than we were even a month ago. But we've got work to do. Clearly, there's a real threat from the States right now. I do want to say, like, we love working with our American neighbors. Like, this isn't something we chose to do. But we will be there for each other as Canadians, and we don't want to become Americans. Otherwise, we would have done that by now. We're quite happy with being Canadians up here and doing the work in the way we do it, which, you know, it's a little different, you know, than how things roll down south. We're the kinder, happier, safer place to be.
100%.
So Crystal and I have the privilege of being able to meet with you and your colleagues as part of the work that we do on behalf of IATSE Local 891. For our listeners who might see politicians or their elected representatives as a bit of a monolith, how do they get in? Like, how do they make their voices known more individually in the day-to-day?
It's a great question. I think when I wasn't in politics, I would look at, yes, politicians as those people. I've realized we're all individuals. And, you know, you may get a great response from one, maybe not so much from the other, but don't let that discourage you, because in the end, we're all just people. I think if you have questions, reach out to your member of the legislature, reach out to your member of parliament, reach out to your city councillor, a school board trustee, depending on what the issue is. Hopefully, they'll get back to you. I would say it's always easier to reach out individually as opposed to a mass group, because if everybody's responsible, sometimes it feels like nobody's responsible, and that it's got to be about relationships. You may like what they say, you may not, but be persistent too. Like, they do have a job to respond to you. Constituents in the West End will call, they'll walk, email, you know, whatever way to try and reach me. And I do try and either get back to them individually, or my staff work with them to solve the problems. And certainly I'm aware of what they say. And that's the same for any MLA, or should be, if they're doing their job properly. You know, we get paid by you to work for you. They're surprised when I call them back and I say, well, you pay my salary, so, you know, you're one of my 50,000 bosses, you know. And so,
you know what that's like.
Yeah, you know exactly, right? Yeah. And if you don't do it, eventually you'll lose your job because you're not paying attention to the needs of your community. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm humbled by it forever because I'm no expert on anything. I just try to work with the community and find the folks that do know what to do and help bring problem to solution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty humbling role because there's so many smart people out there and there's so much need. You know, it's not an easy time for people. And so I approach the work with real humility because there's no other way to do it because, you know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is hard, but it's also joyful work. It's incredible when you help somebody actually achieve a dream. Mm-hmm. You see success, get somebody in off of the street into housing. That same person then gets into training and now has a job. Like, and then you meet them years later and now they have a family and you just go, wow, you know, just a conversation, a coffee or whatever sometimes can lead to incredible changes for people. Yeah. Or systemically, right? Like, you know, you would do the individual, but, you know, making the system work better for people. I think of foster kids. Many years, the government just said, you turned 18, well, you're out on the street. They were ending directly into homelessness. We went, no, that doesn't make any sense. Let's support the foster kids who we as the state are the ward of, help them get into training just like you would want for your own kids, help them get an education, some support with housing. And those folks now who had been primarily on a path to homelessness because of lack of support, a whole bunch of the isms and a whole bunch of other barriers, they're now able to have some hope that they can build that better life that anyone would want to live. Like, just stories like that keep me going.
I really want to thank you for the work that you've done and the work that you're going to do. We're grateful to have you in this position and really thankful for your time.
I'm really thankful for the chance. I think there's going to be some more opportunity to work together. We're looking at questions around a film strategy. You know, what could that do and how can we get more for BC through film? So there'll be plenty more times to talk with you and with your members as we go down this road together.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you
so much for coming in.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Apple Box Talks is an IATSE 891 production, hosted by business representative Crystal Bronworth and assistant business representative Hilary Bergshoff, and produced by Quentin Benetti. For more episodes, check out ourwork.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow us and leave us a 5-star review to go into the draw for an Apple Box Talks coffee mug. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Apple Box.